Welcome to the Disruptive Entrepreneur Podcast.
What does the word disruptive mean to you?
It means going beyond the ordinary, going beyond the status quo.
Not thinking in the conventional way, not just sort of following the herd.
Disruptive means shaking things up, you know?
Disruptive entrepreneur is somebody who sees the problem and embraces the problem with a new way.
Shake up and awakening.
Quality will take care of itself, and you'll go from being disruptive but also profitable.
When you use your own reservoir of talent, when you love what you do, then you disrupt.
Mix it up, change it up, and dominate.
And now, your host, 8 times best-selling author and double world record holder, Rob Moore.
Hello and welcome to the Disruptive Entrepreneur Podcast. It's producer Harry again, here to deliver the introduction for today's episode. So the episode today is with Steve Smith, who is the founder of Poundland. So for those of you who don't know what Poundland is, maybe some of our international listeners, Poundland is a major retailer in the UK, famous for selling all their products for £1. So Steve founded the store in the early 90s, and within 10 years, he sold it for a reported £75 million. So Steve explains the whole process and how he started the business, scaled it, and got out selling it for a lot of money. So if you want to know how to scale your business, maybe you're a startup entrepreneur, you've just started your business, Steve is absolutely the man with the knowledge to tell you guys how to start, scale, and exit your business. Steve will share his Poundland journey and the story of how he started everything, and he'll also give tips on how you guys can sell any product for a pound and make a big profit. So the edit for this episode is a little bit different, actually. We decided to try something a little bit new. Steve was very kind. He invited us into his wonderful, lovely house, and we sat down for the interview, and, you know, Steve tells us the journey. But also, after the interview, me and Rob, we went for a wander around Steve's house, and he was pointing out all the memorabilia and different things related to the story. So we've edited that in as we're going along with the interview. Now, to get the best experience from this episode, I would recommend watching the video, which is on the official Rob Moore YouTube channel, and you can actually see everything in person. You can actually see Steve showing and telling everything about his journey and how he built, scaled, and exited his business. So if you want to watch that, go to the official Rob Moore YouTube channel. But of course, you guys right now are listening to the podcast, so we're going to get straight into the interview with Poundland founder Steve Smith. And remember, if you don't risk anything, you risk everything.
Hi, it's Rob Moore here, and welcome to the Disruptive Entrepreneur Podcast and interview. I think I'm in the biggest house I've ever been in my life, 17,000 square feet. So this is the house of Steve Smith. So Steve set up Poundland in 1990, worked on market stalls from the age of 2, and in 10 years, he built a business from zero and sold it for £72 million. And that was back in the 90s. We've just had a fascinating chat for probably a couple of hours and walked around this amazing house that Steve has. So we're going to go to the interview. But before we do, make sure that you like this video and subscribe to the channel. Well, I want to say thank you, Steve, because you've allowed us into your home.
Oh, you're welcome.
Which is very kind of you. This is an insane house. I don't even know what else you would say. So for people who don't know, you founded Poundland.
Yes.
And I think it was it 1990?
The company started April 1990.
Wow. So that is what, nearly 30 years ago?
That's right. Amazing how time flies by.
Yeah, it does. It does.
So here is interesting. This is when the idea of Poundland came from. So when I came back from Mallorca to open Poundland, and I was telling people that what we wanted to do, I had no shop to show them. I had no photographs. Mm. So a mate of mine was going to art class, and I said to him, can you do me, if I tell you what I wanted to be Poundland like, can you do me a couple of drawings? And These are actually watercolours. Yeah.
All right.
And I think we agreed £20, and he did lease for £20. And this is what I took to the landlord to show him what a Poundland looked like. So this is on the high street, and the green colour, if you notice, the original colour of Poundland green is the average green.
Yes.
I wanted to push up the quality. Yeah. So it's Harry's Green, yeah. It's in prime position, it's a bright shop.
Yeah.
And then here, if you can look, we put the brand now. The brands, yeah, when we first started was Kodak, Eveready, and that's close to my mind because when, as a kid, my mum's job was working for Eveready. She used to solder the tops on the batteries.
Yeah.
Nice. So that was a brand. So Eveready, Philips, Pyrex, Timex, Fisher-Price. So that was the first thing I showed people what a Poundland was going to look like.
This is like a really big starting question, and you can take as long as you want or as short as you want. But I thought it'd be really nice to take us on a journey from starting Poundland in 1990. Was it about 10 years later you sold it?
About 10 and a half years.
Yeah, okay. So 10-year journey, starting a business and then selling it for, what was it, 50 million?
Just over.
Yeah, just over. So I would just love to listen on that journey and how you started it and how it grew.
Okay, great. I suppose it all started on the market store in Bilston, where I used to go with my father as a little boy. And things that used to come out of its original packaging was thrown in a cardboard box and sold for 10p. And this box used to take more money than anything else on the store. And you know, customers used to love it. And from the market store, my dad previously used to work in a factory, and I was coming along and wanted to make some more money.
And how old were you at this point?
On the market store, oh God, I was 2 years of age.
Wow.
I was on the market store. Mom and dad couldn't afford to pay anyone to babysit me. So as a young boy, I was on the market store, and that's where I learned everything I know, really.
Yeah.
So dad started selling boxes of pens around his workmates, and he bought a gross of pens off the newspaper. And he then bought three boxes, got the market store, but found he could make more money working the market store than he could working all week in the factory.
Right.
So the first market store was in Bilston, and we had Wolverhampton, and then we had Birmingham. And we found on the market store that the brightest store in the best position with the right products took the most money. And not long after, my dad had a small cash and carry called Hooties after his nickname. And again, we moved several times. And my dad used to say, one day all this will be yours. And about 3 months after he told me that, he sold the business and said, I've sold the business, we're going to live in Mallorca. And
how old were you at that point?
I was 17.
Right.
And at the age of 17, I'll always remember my dad at the time in Hooties was giving a lot of credit to customers. And I said, Dad, rather than give credit, why don't we open the shop ourselves?
Right.
And I was with my wife, Tracy, or my girlfriend at the time. And because the warehouse didn't used to open up a Saturday, I was shopping with her in West Bromwich, and saw this small shop with a big sign above the door to rent. And I thought, God, at 17, there's no way they're going to let me have this shop. So Monday morning, I got on the phone, put a deep voice on, and said I'd like to take the shop. And I did the deal at the age of 17 and took the shop with a 26 grand year rent and opened it up, and it was called Steve's Discount Market. And this shop in West Bromwich became my dad's biggest customer. It took over £1 million in the first year.
Wow.
Which was amazing. And I bought all the products off my father.
Right.
So when dad told me he was going to sell out and was going to live in Mallorca, because my other family lived in Mallorca.
Yeah.
We said, great.
How did that make you feel? Sorry to jump in. Bearing in mind he'd said one day all this is going to be yours.
I was gutted because I used to work 7 days on the market store. I'd seen the business grow up. From from the market store into a little warehouse in Tipton, where I'll always remember before I went to school, we used to go to the warehouse. We couldn't afford an alarm system, so we had some Alsatian dogs, which we had to.
Work, by the way.
Which I'll always remember. The first job was cleaning the mess up before I went to school.
Yeah.
And then coming back out to school and quickly doing my own work and then helping customers load the van up and all that sort of stuff. So I grew up the business.
Yeah.
So I was pretty gutted when dad said he'd sold the business.
So were you working on the markets from a kid, basically?
Yeah, from yeah. two years of age. So I'd be working, you know, at two. So Saturday I'll be on the market stalls. After left school at 16, Monday to Friday I'll be in the warehouse.
Yeah.
And Sunday was off day trading in the warehouse.
Right.
So I was working all week yeah. trying to build up the business.
And did you love doing that? Was it what your dad kind of nudged you to do?
Yes, I did enjoy buying and selling products because yeah. that was the that was my life, really.
Yeah.
I'd been brought up to, and I used to enjoy buying the products.
Yeah.
So I went from working the market store to working the warehouse to sweeping the floor to filling up the racking to serving the customers and then to buying.
Yeah.
And I think buying is the one that is the job I really enjoy doing the most. And I think I was quite good at it.
What do you like about the buying?
To be able to get a great deal, to get great value for money for the customers.
Yeah.
To be able to take that product into the warehouse and to see it sell very quickly.
Yeah.
And obviously make a profit on it.
Sure.
And with that, for me, you're only as good as your products. If you get great products, you don't need to be the best salesman in the world to sell them.
Right. And how do you sniff out a good deal?
I'd say mainly through the contacts we built up over the years. You know, on the market store, we used to have people travel the country to come and sell us products. And it's down to the people you know and where to get a good deal.
Yeah. Can you remember the best product you've ever had? Like, if you could sell that all day, every day, would be like a dream.
Oh, God, there's many products we've bought. So we've traveled the world buying products. We've bought golf clubs for £1.
A whole set.
Wow. So we bought golf clubs for £1. We bought office desks, 6 foot desks for £1. So it's just amazing. I enjoy buying parcels of stock where you don't know what you're going to get.
Right.
So, you know, we bought 10 containers of mixed stock.
Almost like a gamble to try and find
yeah.
what's in it.
And again, it's like Christmas. You open up every box to see yeah. what you've got and it's and priced up accordingly. But it was amazing.
Yeah.
So my father had built the cash and carry. And we had a cash and carry in Tipton called the Vono. And it was one of the biggest cash and carries in Europe.
Wow.
At the time we turned in 1985, we turned over about £12 million in this one warehouse, which was
wow.
great.
In 1985 money as well.
Yeah, yeah. And people used to travel from all over the country, including, we used to have some big customers from Ireland.
Yeah.
So when Dad said to me, and you know, I was looking forward to opening more cash and carries, and when Dad said to me, look, I've sold the business, we're going to live in York, I was gutted.
Mm.
My father and family left the country and I had to stop for 3 months to hand over the business. And within these 3 months, we had an house, me and Tracy was living in. We sold the house. We bought a trailer to put our personal belongings in. And the night before we was going, my wife started crying. I don't want to leave my friends and family. I want to come back. And so I was gutted again.
So oh, you were going to go to Mallorca. You were
yeah,
you
yeah.
were off.
So we had a one-way ticket.
Wow.
And my parents met me at the airport. And on the way back to their villa, we said, we've got some news. We're not stopping. We're going back home. And this is where my father says, well, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I can't go back into the warehouse because I'm contracted not to. You've sold the business, so I'm going to go into retail. And this is where we talked about the market store. Do you remember on the market? And my father said to me, do you remember on the market store when we did that 10B box? And I said, yes. And the pound coin had just been redesigned.
Wow.
And we put the two and two together and we come up with lots of names. Why don't we sell things for a pound? And we come up with lots of names. We come up with Pound Time, Pound Will, Pound Land. And it was Pound Land that we liked the name the best.
Yeah.
So I came back. We had 2 weeks holiday. We was gutty crying as we came back. And I came back to open Poundland stores.
And how old were you then when you opened your first Poundland store?
I was, 22.
Young.
Yeah, 22.
Yeah.
So I came back to the UK in April 1990, and I found a little office in Sedgley. Bought a second-hand fax machine, second-hand desk. My father loaned me some money because I think he was feeling a bit guilty. He'd sold the business and I was out of a job.
Yeah.
And I came back, we opened a little office. My wife used to work in there, and while she was doing the answering the phone calls and everything, I was busy trying to find a store.
Right.
And I thought it was going to be a lot easier than what it was.
Yeah. Don't we all?
You know, and what I learned from on the market, the brightest store with the right products in the right position took the most money.
Yeah.
So I wanted to be in high streets. I wanted to be on the retail parks.
Yeah.
Where there's a great customer flow, where the people are.
Yeah.
And I wanted a bright store.
Right.
So I am...
When you say bright, you mean the logo, the design, the shop window, is that what you mean?
Well, so I'll give you an example. So on the market store, where everybody else was using 40 and 60 watt light bulbs, we had 150 watt light bulbs.
Right, yeah.
So we had the brightest store on the market.
Yeah,
which literally. Which made us different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I can yeah, in those dark nights, October, November, it was like a spaceship. Yeah. So the brightest store... So I travelled the country looking for stores and got the same knockback. You know, how can you sell things for £1? How are you going to pay the big rents? How are you going to find the staff? It will never work.
Yeah.
But so from April to October, every day I go out, every day I get back, no shop.
Yeah. And how did that make you feel?
Oh, terrible, because... you know, I just knew it was going to be a success, you know, but nobody had seen that cardboard box, how busy it was.
Yeah.
And now the customers loved it.
Is there anything that upsets you or pisses you off in your industry?
Oh, God, in my industry?
Or did? Oh, anything wrong with it or what you wanted to change?
Oh, God, it was very hard for the landlords to get people on board. So, yeah, we've got a new concept to get landlords to actually come and see what you want to do. At the time, we started off in the recession. There wasn't so many free shops as there was today.
Yeah.
But landlords didn't want to know about... landlords probably had it too good.
Yeah.
So they didn't want to... people don't want change.
Mm.
And now, if I'm really honest, the end result, which I could see going on, every town looks the same. They've got a Poundland, they've got Primark, they all look the same.
All the shopping centres, yeah.
So all the shopping centres, all the towns look the same, all the same retailers. And again, if they had spent a bit more time allowing new people to come into the centre, each town could look different and it wouldn't be like it is today.
Right. And when people say to you, oh, that'll never work, because some entrepreneurs, that seems to fire them up. How did that make you feel?
Well, I tell a lot of entrepreneurs now, people laugh when you tell them your idea, the chances are it's going to work.
Yeah.
So I suppose I had a lot to prove, to prove the concept. I'd never really sold everything for £1. You know, in the cardboard box, things were sold for 10p.
Yeah.
But I knew how to source and buy products, so that gave me a lot of confidence. So we came across, I was hoping that landlords would come and look with me or show interest, but they didn't. Most landlords are in London. But we finally found a landlord that was struggling renting out in Burton-on-Trent, a shopping centre called the Octagon Centre. And I did the deal, not realising it was an empty shell. And that was the reason why lots of people wasn't interested.
Yeah.
Because an empty shell and all the, you know, the regulations, you've got to put fire alarms there. You've got to do a lot more work than just taking on a standard shop.
Right.
And so on December the 13th, 1990, we opened the first Poundland store. There were 648 products. And on the first day, we took over £13,000, which was amazing, really.
Yeah.
And
was everything on sale for £1 in the shop? Absolutely everything?
Every item, there's nothing more or nothing less. Every item was £1.
Yeah.
The customers loved it.
Yeah.
We got a little bit of press, and Yeah, that was amazing. We had 648 products.
Yeah, 13,000 units.
The landlords loved it because we drawed a lot of people into the shopping centre.
Right.
And from there, we was able to rent out a lot more stores.
Yeah.
So again, after the first shop opened, it was very difficult because it was getting so close to Christmas, you know, the Christmas trading period. I'd bought a lot more stock than I needed for one store. I had 30 days to pay for the stock. I had a small loan off my father and thinking, well, if this shop doesn't do well, how the hell am I going to pay the suppliers?
Mm.
So I had a short period of time to make it work or not make it work.
Yeah.
After the first shop opened, I thought it was going to be a lot easier. Once again, I thought the landlords would come and have a look at the shop. Now I've got one open. They never did.
Yeah.
The landlords, mostly in London, they wouldn't travel to come and look at one shop.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a brochure done. And they took photographs and did a brochure of the shop. And I posted it to all the landlords. And again, I was still struggling. And I thought to myself, how am I going to get this over? People not believing in the concept. And I looked, I found out that the best shopping centre in the country is a shopping centre in Sheffield called the Meadowall Shopping Centre.
Yeah.
So I went, I found out who the owner was, a guy called at the time, Eddie Healy.
Yeah, I know of him, yeah.
I got to phone him up. He actually took my call after about phoning 20 times every day, trying to drive him mad. I asked if I could come and see him about taking the shopping his centre, and he finally agreed to see me. I didn't tell him what we wanted to sell or what we wanted to do. And to make sure I wasn't late and there and did my homework properly, we went down the night before. I looked around the centre. I looked where could Poundland really work in this centre, and found the best place was on the bottom floor.
Yeah.
I needed 3,000 square feet to really make it, at least 2,000 square feet to make it work.
Yeah.
And couldn't afford an hotel, so we slept in the car that night. And at this stage, Dave Dodd, who used to work for my father at Tooties, had joined the company. He was working, after my father sold, he went to work for one of our big suppliers and was paid a lot of money. At the time in 1990, he was paid £120,000, which is good wages for that time. And he phoned me up and he says, I've heard you're opening Poundland. And I says, yes. He said, I'd like to come and join you. And I said, Dave, there's no way I'm going to pay your wages. People tell me you're under. He says, well, I am. I says, well, I can't afford that. And he said, well, what can you afford? I said, I don't know, 200 quid a week. And he went, done.
Wow.
So Dave also took a big gamble by joining the company. And
why do you think he did that?
Because he'd probably worked for my father and myself for quite a few years. He knew that we'd, you know, he knew certainly I that what I wanted to grow something.
Yeah.
He believed in the concept. So Dave was one of the persons that believed in the concept. We joined the company, and for that we give Dave 5% shares, and then 10%, and then 15% shares of the company. As we grew.
So his faith in you was rewarded.
This is one of the shots in the warehouse. There were 6 aisles. This is one of the aisles. This warehouse was designed to turn over $500 million.
Wow.
There was 37,000 pallet spaces locations in there. Somebody actually presented me this because he said, I'd negotiated that good on the racking, he only made £1. And I said, well, £1's enough in there.
Yeah.
And he's actually...
£1 would be enough. Could get
he's
that
actually,
in there.
He's actually given me £1 back.
Right, yeah. So he made nothing.
So he made...
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to give you £1 back.
Yeah.
So me and Dave had stopped the night in Meadowall Shopping Centre and had a meeting with Eddie Healy. Presented to him, and at the end of the presentation, he said, I've got 2 things to say. Yes, yeah. He said, number one, I love the concept. I went, oh, great, we got a shop. And the second word was, I'm sorry, but I've got no shops. And at this stage, we said, it was really good that we went down the night before because we'd done our own work. And we said, well, we think we've identified a shop on the lower floor, and it was called Video Magic. And he went, yeah. And I said, well, we believe that with the internet coming along, customers love to go and fetch a video film, you know, the old tapes, but nobody likes to take them back.
Yeah.
And with the age of the internet coming along, we believe people are going to start to download films in the future. And we said, look, if this shop comes available, can we have it? And he says, if it comes available, it's yours. And 2 months later, we had a phone call. He was right, the shop's available. So we did the deal. What we didn't understand, or we didn't ask, we thought we'd done our own work properly.
Yeah.
But this shop was £120,000 rent a year.
Wow.
The service charge was 90 grand.
Yeah.
And the rate was nearly 100 grand.
Yeah.
So this shop in almost 1991 was almost like £260,000.
And the Burton-on-Trent one was?
60.
Yeah, all in. Wow.
So yeah, we've gone from 60 to £250,000.
Wow. And is this your second store? The
second
one
store.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's such a massive gamble. And I found my father in Mallorca, and he said to me, and Dave says, God, that's more money than I had the biggest warehouse in Europe.
Yeah.
You must be mad. You better come over and discuss it. So me and Dave went over to Mallorca for a weekend and discussed the shop. And Dad said, I can't believe, you know, you're going from 60 grand to £250,000 rent for your second shop.
Yeah.
How's this ever going to work? And I'll always remember while we was discussing it. And there was a dustman man who was emptying my dad's bins at the time. He'd stopped and he was listening to the conversation. And as a joke, we said, what do you think we should do? He says, have the shop. So it was actually a dustman who made the first decision. So my dad says, okay, that's it then. So we came back to Mallorca. Me and Dave, again, it was coming up to Christmas. It's probably the first time I ever spent 54 hours working without any sleep.
Wow.
And my dad, for the first time, came over from Mallorca to see the shop.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't believe how much we pay for it.
Mm.
And I'll always remember to save money, we had like a Dayglow sign on Burton-on-Trent, grand opening 9:30. And to save money, we'd roll this Dayglow card up, and we thought we'd use that for the next shop opening. So we put it in the window, grand opening, 9:30.
Yeah.
We'd work 54 hours. My dad had just arrived there. The shop looking amazing. We had some great staff. And at 9:31, we thought, oh, God, we can't open doors yet. There's one person outside the door. And my dad must have asked me a million times, how much have you paid for this shop? And at the time, he'd ask, oh, God, let's go and get a coffee from McDonald's. And we walked to McDonald's in the food court. And there, after all the coffee, talking to the manager, we said, can't believe it. We think we've got a great position in Meadowall Shopping Centre. We're opening a new shop called Poundland today, selling everything £1. Opening's 9:30, there's one person outside the shop. And then that's when he said to us, well, the shopping centre don't open until 10. So... we didn't do our own work properly on that.
Yeah, yeah.
We were just too busy opening the store.
Yeah.
We came back about 5 minutes after 10, and my father was standing outside. There wasn't enough room for him to get in.
Wow.
And that week, in 2,200 square feet, which was a small store, we took £134,000.
Wow.
Which was amazing.
Yeah.
And then from there... the job became a lot. That was our biggest break. The job became a lot easier.
What, because you had a proof of concept in a big shopping centre?
Well, what we used to say then to the landlords, if Poundland is good enough for Meadowall Shopping Centre, yeah, it's good enough for your shopping centre.
Yeah.
And from there, we opened shop after shop. And then my first dream was to, let's say, beat Dad's turnover. Because Dad used to turn over 11, 12 million with cash and carry. So the first one, let's do 10 million, let's do 12 million. Okay, we beat that. The next was, let's do 20 million, let's do 50 million, let's do 100 million. And the dream became, how big can this concept been? And I always remember carried this leaflet around with me. If anybody used to talk to me about Poundland, I used to get it out of my pocket and talk about, this is the stores, this is the staff.
Yeah.
And the dream became £1 billion.
Wow. Did you get it?
Which is amazing, really.
Yeah.
Well, So Penland became a brand that people recognised with it. There was, I always remember, people joking, you used to see the comedians talking about, I got it from the pound shop, even down to on Coronation Street. Got it from the pound shop. We had quite a few celebrities. We've had loads of celebrities coming in the shop, which is amazing. We used to travel the world buying product. So we used to have an office in India, an office in China, in Hong Kong. I used to spend all my time traveling the world, finding great products for the store. One of the odd things was, because I used to work in a warehouse, in a cash and carry, in one place, when you open up multiple sites, it's hard to let go sometimes. And I'll always remember, it was an ice cream man that gave me more confidence. And at the time, he had 9 ice cream vans. He said, well, what's better, Steve, having 1 ice cream van working at 100% or having 9 or 10 and 90%? Oh, 90%. So what I did, I relaxed a lot more, but I put a lot of time into software. So the software that made sure that all the shops had the right product at the right time, that with the linked up the warehouse with all the branch managers on reordering all the products and that, and that gave me a lot more confidence. So software really helped the business grow, really.
Yeah. I noticed when I used your bathroom, there's this glass table with lots of autobiographies on it.
Yeah.
So is there like one person or one autobiography that you've read that you think's great, that if you were listening to a podcast, you'd want to listen to that person?
That's difficult for me. I've never read a book in my life.
Oh, right. They're just there for show.
Well,
let's have a look. Get the butler in.
So people,
you've never read a book in your whole life?
So people like David, David's friend.
Yeah.
So on the journey, you get to meet lots of different people. This is David Coulthard. This is his book.
David's agreed, isn't he, to do the podcast?
He has.
So if you speak David,
I'll say hi.
I spent quite a bit of time on boats with David and good laugh, yeah.
Yeah.
Kevin, so these people's friends, Kevin Threfel.
Right, yeah.
Kevin Threfel was the guy who started the one-stop shops.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's Kevin's book. So lots of different books I've got and signed copies and all sorts is because
right, I know the friends people of yours who've written the books.
Yeah. And the same as, yeah.
I've interviewed Simon. He's a really lovely man.
Yeah, nice guy. And although I haven't finished yet, I have started.
Ah. If you can get it finished by the time we go live, we can promote it for you.
Yeah, so I've started to do a book, and mainly for charity. So we were doing a charity event, and although I hadn't finished it, and maybe I should just have some copies printed up to sell it for charity.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
So just it's gonna be called Mr. Poundland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So the problem is I've never read a book in my life, and maybe that's down to time. And if I'm really honest, I'll get bored when I read. The only time it was good is when I started speed reading.
Yeah.
Speed reading was better for me.
Yeah.
But I've never completed the book.
No? So how do you get all your information then? Because now you've got great books, great podcasts. You can learn a lot online.
How do you
learn when you want to figure something out?
I never read instructions.
No.
I always put stuff together. Yeah. I always try and figure it out.
Right.
Without reading instructions. If there's something in business that I need help with, then because the amount of people I know, I just pick up the phone and just ask their advice.
Over the years.
Obviously, we Google and that these days. There's some things you can just, in the sentence, you can figure things out, can't you?
Yeah. It's quite common, isn't it, for entrepreneurs who hire and then maybe set up multiple locations to find it really hard to let go of control and doing it your way and maybe a bit of perfectionism. How did you manage to do that? Okay, it sounded like the ice cream van man gave you some good advice, but how did you actually manage to let go? How many stores did you have before you sold?
We was turnover, before we sold, we was turnover over £200 million.
Yeah.
and he was just over 100 stores.
Wow. So you clearly have got good at letting go, because you can only be in one store at a time.
You can only be in one store at a time, but the systems we had was fantastic. So, for example, from our desk in head office, which was in not far from Waterloo on the Backcountry route, about to be built, I could look around with the cameras around the stores. I could see actually what's going through the till. So I could watch them. So I could look at the old company that was turning over. As I drill down, I could drill right the way down. So I can actually watch a till, watch the items being scanned and coming up on my screen that was going through the till.
And this is in the 90s.
Yeah. We had some fantastic software. I'll always remember we started working with a company called M&O with a guy called George. And we got to be their biggest customer. And then just before the last move, I said, George, come and join us. You be the IT director. So we bought their company out and then they joined us.
Right.
Which was great.
Yeah.
So it was amazing, the software and the growth. But the other thing was the distribution warehouse. I'll always remember, it's amazing how things work out, really. The warehouse that, the piece of land... The warehouse that we built, the retail support centre, is the same warehouse where my dad was the factory that my dad worked in.
Right.
And I'll always remember, before we knocked it down, the factory, and built our distribution centre, I phoned dad and he was due to come to a visit to England from Mallorca. And I said, I've got something to show you. And I took him to the factory. And he said, God, this is the factory where I used to work. I said, no. Took him around the factory, and I'll always remember, there's a mezzanine floor. You see on that mezzanine floor, yeah, he says, in my dinner hour, that's where I learned to play cards. And this is the same factory he used to go round selling his pens.
Right, yeah.
And he said, how come you put me? I says, we've just bought it.
Yeah.
To build the new retail support centre.
Yeah.
And amazing, prior to my dad working there selling his pens, my granddad met my nan there. My granddad used to work in this factory as well.
Right.
So we bought it.
So there's a lot of family history, that place.
Yeah. So we bought it, built the, we developed. I used to always remember Tracy's, my wife's mum and dad used to work at Steve's Discount Market. They used to cashing up, and they used to go to their house every Sunday for dinner. And I used to, as we were building the warehouse, and it was more or less on a bag packet, we built a warehouse, which is about 250,000 square feet. And that was capable of turning over half a billion.
Wow. Pound. Yeah. So I reckon we're halfway through the journey maybe, and I'll keep that thread going through. But
okay.
Some questions as you go. I'm fascinated to know, how did you invest the money that your dad loaned you to start the company? And the reason I ask is many startup entrepreneurs get money to invest,
yes,
and they often don't know what to do with it. Is it personnel, marketing, stock, a bit of all? How did you invest it?
Obviously, for me, the first thing was we had an office to work from. With that office, the reason I had the office was to, it was somewhere for the post to go to, somewhere for, I thought I was going to get a shop quicker than I did, but it was somewhere for me to start buying from. The first shop was the most important thing, because without a shop, you've got nowhere to sell your product.
Yeah.
So the first thing was getting the shop and putting the money into some racking, the tills, getting it open.
Yeah.
From there, because we had a track record with our suppliers, some of the suppliers we had to pay pro forma for products, but the suppliers we had a track record, they give us a bit of credit.
Yeah.
So get the products in. Once the products was in, because I was in shops and because we paid bigger rents to get the positions, we didn't need to spend any money on marketing because you got the flow of customers coming past the door.
Yeah.
And again, if the products, because the products was really good, word of mouth, people would tell people.
Yeah.
So we spent nothing at all on marketing.
Yeah.
It was all on the...
Because you got the locations.
Yeah. It's all about opening the shop as cheaply as we could.
Right.
And spending the money on the product.
Yeah. Okay. So in your journey, we've got to your second store. So take us to 10, 50 and the growth of it.
Yeah. So the second... well, as soon as we opened Meadowhall Shopping Centre, like I said, it was if Poundland's good enough for Meadowhall, it's good enough for your shopping centre. So we did now photographs of what we was doing. We did mail shots to all the suppliers.
Yeah.
We then got somebody on board called Bernard McLoham. He just started his own company and he was hungry to get fees.
Yeah.
So he would go out and find more stores for us.
Yeah.
I'll always remember me and Dave used to go to the shops that was offered and stand outside and count the number of people passing the door. Every, you know, put your watch on, how many people pass the door? Is it busy enough?
Yeah.
How much rent do they want to do? You never know how much money you're going to take until you open the doors.
Yeah.
Even at the death.
Right.
It was almost like, I don't know, the biggest shop we could get for £100,000 rent was, seemed to be like the right thing, type of formula.
Right, yeah.
And then as we was opening shop after shop, the important thing was the buying power. As our turnover, a typical store would turn over, let's say, £1 million. Meadowhall at the time was turning over about 2.3 million. That's in the end.
Yeah.
And as the buying power came on, it allowed us to do lots more with the product. Yeah. So I love giving value for money. So for example, let's say we're selling 72 pegs in the bag, you know, 72 wooden pegs in the bag.
Yeah.
Because now we can now go to the Far East, we can start importing.
Right.
So as soon as our turnover was about £10 million, we was importing.
Yeah.
Which allowed us to get better value products to make a little bit more margin.
Yeah.
So sourcing the world. The only difficult there was, if I'm honest, looking back, I always say to the entrepreneurs, you got to get the balance right. You know, you got to be good at business, good partner, and a good dad. I probably missed the best years of my daughter growing up because right. I used to go out every morning, she was asleep. I used to get home, she was asleep. Or I was traveling the world, finding products.
Any regrets there?
I believe I could have balanced that more properly, but time flies by and before you know it, I suppose with me, before I know she was 16. A little regret, but I suppose if you're growing businesses that you have to sacrifice certain things, but it's just making sure you get the balance a bit better than I did on that front.
And the growth that you grew from 0 to 200 million, after your initial finance from your dad, did you borrow external money or was it all funded through profit and cash flow of the business?
It was all through cash flow and business. The bank hardly or very little loaned us. So from the initial loan from my father, we grew everything out of cash flow.
Yeah.
So I would go to our finance guy at the time, I say, Chris, how much money have we got in the bank? How much money have we got available? Oh, that'll open 4 shops, 5 shops.
Right.
As we got bigger, landlords started giving us rent free,
mm-hmm.
which then made we can open up another store for less cash. So we opened shop after shop, and then what happened was, as we got bigger, Dave started working more on the shop side and I worked on the distribution, on the supply chain and on the finance side.
Yeah.
So, you know, he'd be opening stores, I'll be going, systems, I spent so much time on systems. Our systems were fantastic. I always remember KPMG came down to see us and said, God, the top supermarkets would love your software. Mm. Because you have to get it right.
Yeah.
You know, selling things for £1, you can't come down. There's only one way to come down on price is you have to do £2 for £1.
Right, yeah.
Which you lose a lot of money.
Of course.
So you have to get it right. You have to get the system right and information right.
Yeah.
So we used to have a team. So from me and Dave, we then started like area managers and then we got a finance director and the team started developing.
Yeah.
So it was amazing. So from you know, me and Trace in an office, 1990, to employing almost 6,000 people.
Wow, in 10 years.
Yeah.
And 200 million in 10 years?
Yes.
Selling products for a pound?
Yes.
That's great. Can you remember what the rough average margin was at the point maybe of selling, like you sell for a pound? Can you remember the margins on those?
Yes. So it's all about, something that we created, because I'll always remember, everybody keeps saying you need more margin. And for me, it's not just about the margin, it's about the margin. We come up with a formula called the margin rate to sale.
Yeah.
So I'll give you an example. So imagine we're selling a 4-pack kitchen roll for a pound, and let's say it costs us 50p. For 60p, we can sell 6.
Right, yeah.
And instead of selling hundreds, you sell thousands of pack of 6.
Yeah.
And make more money.
Right.
So I'd always pass on the value. At the time, the average price, remember, when we sell things for a pound, it's like 83p plus the VAT. And at the time, the average price of it was about 55, 56p.
Yeah.
Which allowed, as long as we achieved the high turnover, we was able to pay the wages, the costs, and I always remember my finance director coming in and says, "You've done it, Steve." And I said, "Done what?" He says, "Your expenses now are £1 million a week."
Wow. Yeah.
That's frightening. When you get up Monday morning, you've got to make £1 million that week before you make anything.
Can you remember the best advice you ever got?
There's no bad products, only bad prices.
Right. Yeah.
So if you don't price up your stuff, you like the WD-40, then you don't sell it and don't go anywhere. I always say to people, if you've got an idea, before you do it yourself, go and work for somebody.
Mm.
If I had to go and work for my father, to buy, to sell, and to learn how to do it. And although it's wholesaling, we went retail. Some things you don't have to change much to be very successful or not.
But yeah.
I always say to people, go and work for somebody doing what you want to do first.
Yeah.
Before you start something. I see a lot of people come up with an idea and it's different to what you think.
Mm.
So there's been, exciting times through Poundland's growth and... Yeah, we moved several warehouses. The one warehouse, we had a small warehouse, then we bought next door and was able to buy next door again. So we had 3 or 4 warehouses in the line, then we moved again. Mm. What I found is every 5 years, you'd have a dip in profit and turnover when you needed to move warehouse.
Right.
The last warehouse that we built, I'll always remember, it was late being built.
Standard.
Well, I'll always remember we had somebody tap the door and said, this used to be an engineering business. I said, yeah, my dad used to work there, factory. He says, you got to put lime in the dirt, in the soil. And I'll always remember paying out a cheque for £300,000 for all these lorries bringing lime to tip in the dirt before we could start it.
Wow.
Crazy regulations.
Yeah, we've just had a £200,000 quote for asbestos removal in one of our properties, and it's hard to budget for stuff like that.
It's hard to budget.
Yeah.
And also it delays you. So I'll always remember the warehouse was late. We had stock another 8 or 9 stores opening. We had stock coming from all over the world.
Mm.
We was banking on this warehouse. It was going to be late.
Yeah.
And making the dreaded call to Dave. Dave, the warehouse is going to be late. We need some temporary warehouses. And we had to find 3 warehouses quick. We had to staff it. And we didn't have the systems to cope with 3 warehouses.
Yeah.
And I always remember just before we sold out, one of our top suppliers came to see me. And we was building the new warehouse at the time and said, what can I do? I thought he was going to sell me a beer stock. And I said, what can I do for you? He says, I want to buy Poundland. And I'll always remember he gave me a cheque for £10 million. And I've gobsmacked her. And I had to say, I need to discuss with Dave and Dad before I can tell you. He said, well, tell me in the morning. I'll always remember finding my father and saying, supplies come in, just give me a check for 10 million. First words out of my dad's mouth was, sell it. And I said, Dad, I'm not ready. I'm building this warehouse. We've got shop
where,
opening.
Where
shop
was, can you remember the year?
That was... 2000.
Yeah.
And I said, Dad, I'm not ready. David says it's up to me. And Dad, I'm not ready. I want to keep it. And Dad gave me loads of, you know, you should do this, you should sell it. And he, but he says, okay, it's up to you. So we kept it. We tried, the Christmas was coming, we were opening this warehouse, it came late. We had to open three warehouses. And I said to the supplier, look, can we talk again in January? And he says, yeah, I've got Christmas, got to get the warehouse open. Yeah, he said, okay, fine. He said to me, keep the check. So I put this check in my back pocket.
Do you still have it, by the way?
No, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, almost.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what.
There's a story in that.
Yeah, yeah. And I used to look, every day I used to look at this check, and the warehouse became late. And when we got the dreaded call about, we're not going to open for Christmas, we need three Tempe warehouses. Oh, maybe I should have took this check. The warehouse became late, we couldn't get the stock to the stores. And I'll always remember Christmas Eve, we had this fantastic warehouse, beautiful. And sitting in the warehouse with £10 million worth of Christmas stock, we didn't sell.
Wow.
Because we were late bringing it in, we couldn't get to the stores. Christmas Eve, I came back home, and I said to the wife, well, I should have probably took this check. and I was worried, how the hell am I going to pay for this stock? I'm not sure Poundland is going to survive if everybody wants paying. And January, the supplier was invited to the warehouse. He looked all the way around the warehouse. He said, oh, great, I love the warehouse, love everything. Now take me to the ballroom and show me the figures. Took him to the ballroom, showed him the turnover we did Christmas, because we couldn't get the stock to the stores, turnover was way down. In the warehouse, you could see we had £10 million worth of stock. And he said to me, have you still got my check? And I said, yes. Took it out of my back pocket, there it is, all crumpled up. Let's look at it every day. And he, in front of me, he ripped the check up, and his words was, thank God I never bought it. And he put the check in the bin, all ripped up. And he probably took me an hour to get the courage up to phone Dad up and say, Dad, as soon as I picked the phone up, his words was, okay, has he bought it? And I says, no, Dad, he's ripped the check up. And he said, I told you so. And my father, I think he ended up putting the phone down on me. And I suppose the old term, you know, if you're the leader of the business, it's very lonely sometimes at the top. Thinking, LVL, I'm going to pay for all this stock.
Yeah.
All the bills were piling in. And I thought to myself, how are we going to get out of this one? So what we decided to do, because we had a new warehouse and we was opening up a new store in Liverpool, which was the biggest shop we'd ever opened. It was about 10,000 square feet, which was three or four times bigger than anything else we've opened before. We decided to invite all of our top suppliers to come have a look. So we hired a 52-seater coach. They all came, we all met at the place. They all came on the coach. We took them down to Liverpool. We showed them the shop opening. After the shop opening, we took them to the warehouse, showed them around the warehouse. And then me and Dave did a presentation to them. They love the shop. They love the warehouse. And at the end of the presentation, I asked them what they thought, and they all agreed it was fantastic. And I asked them for their help. And they said, what do you need, Steve? I said, well, you can see in the warehouse. The warehouse was late. We had got £10 million of stock. I can't pay you for it. And they said, what do you need? And I said, well, I need 3 months credit. You know, would you freeze your check for 3 months? And then we're able to pay. And it only took one to put their hand up and say, Steve, I'm in. And they all did.
Yeah.
And if they hadn't done that, then Poundland wouldn't be here today.
Wow.
So for me, what that learned me is suppliers are as important as customers.
Yeah.
And they all freeze the checks for 3 months, which allowed the warehouse to kick in, which allowed us to open more shops, to allow just the cash flow to come in. And very shortly after, Christmas was coming back again, because September, it's amazing really, customers start buying Christmas stock in September. It gets earlier and earlier every year.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
And the warehouse kicked in. Now I could tell that my father was, he was disappointed that we hadn't sold. And I'll always remember I used to go to breakfast meetings, and at a particular breakfast meeting, I met a guy from who was in the finance world, a guy called Tim Franks from a company called Advent. And he said to me, if you ever want to sell, give me a call. And this is where you're only as good as what you know. I always say contacts are so important. When somebody gives you a card, you might not do business now, but sometime in your life, if you think that person is good, you're going to do business with them.
Yeah.
You know, I'm doing business now with people who give me a card 15, 20 years ago.
Mm.
Go through my card, like, oh, I need a photographer. Oh, God.
Yeah.
8 years ago, 10 years ago, somebody gave me a card for a photographer. So I'd phone them up and say, remember we met and give me a card? Yeah. Can you come in? So I phoned this guy up and said, I met you 2 years ago. We're in the new warehouse now. The business is exciting. Come and have a look. And he came to see the new warehouse and he loved it. And within a week and a half, we had an offer for almost £50 million. So within six months of that guy right ripping the check up,
wow,
to the second offer from £20 million to £50 million.
Yeah.
As soon as I got that offer letter, phoned Dad. Dad was, what are you going to do now? Oh God, what do I do now? And at the time I had two boys and I thought, well, the next stage of the business is going to be another big growth, because now the warehouse is going to grow from 200 million to half a billion, then from half a billion to a billion. It's a lot of check, a lot of money. What do we do? So I made the decision. So I said, okay, I'll sell. And they came and did their due diligence. And I thought it was going to be a nice experience selling, and it wasn't for me.
Why not? Because that I've heard that quite commonly. My friend Neville Wright, who sold Kiddie Care, said it was one of the worst days of his life.
So the oddest thing, so I came to sell the business, and I thought to myself, so at the time, I built up a good management team. I brought some people on board. If I'm really honest with you, if I wasn't selling, there's no way I would have brought them on board. We had to bring them on board just so on paper.
Yeah.
We got the people behind, which allowed me the chance of walking away.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I could have stopped there and did the business over and be part of it with other people leading it. I don't know. I like to get, I think things changed. Now I'm older, things have changed now because I do invest in a lot of startup businesses. But at the time, there can only be one boss and somebody in control.
So you didn't really want to take orders from anyone else?
Well, not take orders. I listened to everyone else, but it's just at the time I used to just lead it. Really, I've just been used to leading it and making decisions every day. And it's hard to let go of your baby.
Yeah.
But I decided to sell it. So Advent came in, did their due diligence, we had to go to London to sell it. All the top solicitors down in London.
Yeah.
All the solicitors, it was almost like, I can't believe how much it cost to sell the business. Everybody wants to get involved. All the lawyers, oh God, this is the last time we can make a good chunk of money. Let's all. And then we had like six lots of solicitors selling it.
Wow. All taking their fees.
Yeah. Mum and Dad actually came, they didn't come very often in the 10 years from Mallorca, but they came when we opened the Meadowall Shopping Centre. They came in between, and they came when we were selling it.
Yeah.
And we went to London. There was me and Tracy, me and my wife, Mum and Dad, went to London, and Dave came for a day. And I'll always remember the big agenda, you know, the paperwork on the desk, and I was just a full day signing things.
Yeah.
And as I was signing things, Dad used to come and tap me on the shoulder and saying, he's going. I had to sack my wife, I got sack my wife, and she used to, she then had to have a solicitor to say.
Harry found that funny, I don't know why.
I had to sack my wife, funny. And then she had to have a solicitor say, well, you know, we shouldn't be sacking you, you should not be sacked. And it was absolutely lots of crazy
things. So you're executing all these things on the same day, basically.
The same day, yeah.
Yeah.
And one of the things I couldn't get in, you know, I couldn't talk to the staff. I couldn't tell the staff what was going on because, you know, I wanted to tell them. I'd always inform, it wasn't me, wife, Dave, that created Pound. It was the people. Everybody, it was like one big family.
Yeah.
And even today, one of the girls there, Nikki, she worked for my father in the first warehouse. She's still with us today,
wow,
working in the business. The finance controller, that was in Poundland, still work with him today.
Yeah.
So there's lots of key people that we've kept in contact with, all still working today with them, you know, 30 years onwards.
Yeah.
So the people are so important, and I wanted to tell the people but wasn't able to. So in London, you know, there'd be words that coming up. So I'd have to go in the room and we have to discuss about changing this word in the document and everything else. And where the fees, we thought it was going to cost £20,000-£30,000 to sell the business. It ended up being like £400,000-£500,000 to sell the business in fees. Pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And I'll always remember, it was all day. The business was finally sold at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
Everybody's tired. Everybody is exhausted.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, well done. Business sold. That's it.
Mm. And how did you feel right then?
It was like somebody had died in the family.
Wow. Even though there was 50-ish million quid.
Yeah. So it was like somebody's died in the business, and You never think about the money when you're growing a business. The money's always, yes, it's what you're doing at the end of the day, the end result. But as long as you are enjoying and doing what you're doing, the money normally follows.
Yeah.
You know, when I first started, you know, my first wage packet was £22. Yeah.
Mm.
Towards the end, my wages was probably up to a year or so pound, and I was taking £500 a week.
Yeah.
The wages was never, the money was always last. So at 3 o'clock in the morning, it was like somebody had died, and all these solicitors really milked it for every penny. And, you know, we spent hours just on the word in the document. And I'll always remember, got to the end, finished, and I said to me, where do I get the cash? Where do I pick up the cash then? They says, oh, you don't get cash, the money will be transferred into your account. And I said, no, look, got the document. I said, look, it says cash.
And the word, just wanted to collect 50 million.
I just wanted
cash.
To prove a point. Bloody hell, all these words being changed. And then, you know, he says cash there. The room went quiet, but then I just joked. And and we went back home. He was all knackered. And I think we had one drink and went to bed.
Yeah.
But so it wasn't a very, and even the next day, it was like, part of the contract, well, you can't tell the people.
Wow.
So the next day.
How long did you have to wait until you could tell them?
I couldn't tell them.
Oh, so someone else told them.
So the company that bought it went in and wanted to tell the people and everything themselves. And and even that week, you know, although we sold it, that week we had calls coming to us all the time, which we couldn't be contracted not to say anything, which was so difficult. Mm. Most days for a couple of weeks, my wife would cry every day. So
it's really interesting to hear that story, because I think a lot of people probably perceive that the day you sell for 50 million, 100 million, whatever, is the happiest day of your life. But that story is not so uncommon.
Yeah. So for me, you've got enjoy. Yeah, I'll give you a scenario. You've got to enjoy things as you build up a business. Yes, it's nice to have the money at the end and the end result, but working with people that you enjoy working with and seeing, you know, being at that first shop where you don't know whether you're going to take nothing or lots of money. I'll give you something else. 3 years ago, I was in Dubai. Traveling, and with another business I'm involved with, which is mobile payments, I traveled to Dubai and then to Oman. And I came back from Oman after we seemed to have done a deal with Emirates. And I had a pain in the back of my leg. And I thought, oh, God, I must have pulled my leg because I've been walking a lot. Next thing I know, I'm in intensive care.
Bloody hell.
And my wife is called in and they says you've had a blood clot. It's travelled to your lungs. It's broke off your lungs. And we think you've got 3 hours to live. And in those 3 hours, we obviously we just knocked back, yeah. And what's amazing in three hours, because there was two other people in intensive care with me, they died with the same problem as I had. And I was on the machine, I always remember, I've got photographs of when I was there, I always remember on this machine, every few minutes it was calibrating, and it was going up and up and up, thinking I've got 3 hours to live. And I was thinking, well, at least I've had a good life. And then you start thinking back about all the things you've done in your life, yeah. And it falls into two categories. All the things you've done in your life, you know, remember the first shop, remember when you chair that checkup, remember, you know, the first employee, you know, all the things and experience you've done. with Poundland, we spent time with prime ministers, spent time with 10 Downing Street, we spent time meeting the Queen. So we've done lots of exciting things with Poundland. And then all that is gone in your mind 5 years, you know, in 5 minutes. You got 2.5 hours to live. And then you start thinking, well, the things you would like to have done, it falls in two categories. The things that you've got control over. So, for example, I wish I'd gone to the Maldives, but I never did it. And then the stuff you haven't got control of, I'd like to go to my son's wedding. Well, that's up to him. Mm. So it's amazing. And you didn't really, the money allows you to do things, but I think life is about experiences.
Yeah.
The money allows you to have more experiences. But the things that you remember most is the things that really didn't cost much money. Mm. The things when you're growing up your businesses, the things that you laugh about.
Yeah. So do you regret then selling?
The things you regret, it would have been nice to see that business go through, you know, from 200 million to half a billion to a billion.
Is it about 1.5 now? So what is it? It's quite...
The marketplace now for pound shops, we was the first people to bring the pound concept into the country.
Yeah.
And from there, lots of other people copied.
Yeah.
But the marketplace, when last time we did that was research, was the marketplace now is worth 5 billion.
Wow.
85% of the population have either been in or bought from a pound store.
Yeah.
What you regret is the people, working with the people.
As in, you miss that.
You miss working with the people and the laughs you have along the journey.
Yeah.
You know, and it's very hard because when you do sell, although we made almost five people millionaires, yeah, with what we did. But I suppose the bulk of the people, you know, 6,000 people are still working, you know, there's people still working there today. So you miss working with the people, really.
Yeah. So you're in intensive care and you think you've got 2.5 hours or whatever to live. In addition to what you said, what else goes through your head? Any regrets?
It's very difficult when you've got 2 hours to live, your family and children are 8 hours away. What we did, Trace and I, put our mind to finding the drug. So in 2.5 hours, we found a test drug in the world, got it delivered, had it, and it was a 10% chance of surviving with it, and I survived.
Wow. Maybe all your experience of trading product all over the world helped to get over quick. Yeah, wow, that's amazing. Can you remember any bad advice you've ever been given? This is a bad question, I know, but it sometimes gets good answers. Worst advice?
Bad advice. I always remember working on the market stall where everybody says we're crazy on the pricing because we give good value for money. Mm. And someone says, you're crazy, you're working too cheap, you should put your prices up. And what we did, we think, well, maybe we're wrong. Maybe we should listen to them. And we put our prices up.
And the first week, turnover, same turnover.
Yeah.
We made double the amount of money. I mean, it got me wrong.
Yeah.
Second week, the turnover came down. Third week came down. Fourth week, dropped out the floor.
Right.
And it took us probably 8 months to get our customer flow back.
Mm.
Because people come, they buy off you. They don't show your DNA. They just buy because I'm there. But they don't come back.
Mm. Why were you so keen to get store after store after store after store after store? Why didn't you get to 5 or 10 and go, that's enough for me?
I used to love buying, and buying is all about buying power. And if you get more buying power, you can do more with it.
Right.
So instead of 4 kitchen rolls, if I can get the buying power, I can have 6 kitchen rolls for a pound. Yeah.
Yeah.
If I do 10 million, I can go into importing. If I do 50 million, we can have our own office. If,
right.
if we do 100 million, I can get a bit more margin for the company. So it's all about buying power.
Yeah. Okay. Poundland, what would you say is or was unique about it, the concept?
Well, it's obviously unique that everything is £1 because... customers used to come into the shop and used to say, I can't believe everything's a pound. And that is the question that drove the staff mad.
Yeah.
And I'll always remember, because I thought, just put us on the way, you know, well, Poundland, everything, £1, that will do it. People can't believe the value for money that we gave. And every ticket edge, I mean, the phrase was, yes, everything is £1.
Yeah.
So
that must be so unique. I can't think of any other pricing model like that.
No, so there's no pricing model like that. And because of that pricing model that you found that people like Aldi, Sainsbury's, Tesco started doing pound sections in their stores.
Mm.
So everything for £1 was, and because we give such great value and because we had great positions, we got the passing trade to bring people in.
Yeah.
So that £1 price barrier, because the stigma, people used to think, well, for a pound it must be rubbish, must be seconds.
Yeah.
People can't believe what we sold. Mm. And I'll always remember getting into brands. Our first brand was WD-40.
Yeah. Displacement 40 after all the failures. Yeah.
So WD-40 was our brand, and although we tried to go into brands, nobody would service because we was a pound price point.
Yeah.
We give great value for money, so we was really cutting up the market. And I'll always remember going to the NEC Spring Fair show, walking onto the WD stand, and probably made the mistake of saying, when they said, where are you from? I said, from Poundland. Oh, you sell things for a pound? Yes. We'll come and see you.
Yeah, yeah.
They never did.
Yeah.
And on the second or third year, I went to on their stand again, and I said, we'll come and see you. And I said, you've said that 2 years. I'm not leaving this stand until you take an order from me.
Yeah.
So it's about being persistent and getting what you want, really.
Yeah.
I'm fine with startups and entrepreneurs. If you get what you want.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm not leaving until I place an order. And by this time, we'd opened a few shops, so we had buying power. And at the time, I probably wanted 10,000 pieces. But just to show them, we can give a good order. I placed an order for 50,000 tins.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at the time, the best price I could get was 82p. If you remember, we sell for 83p plus VAT.
Yeah.
So he's going to make a penny on the product.
Wow.
And they took the order off us and they delivered. Within 8 days, I phoned them up and said, can I place an order? And they said to me, what have you done with the 50,000 cans? And I said, I've sold them. They couldn't believe how fast we sold them.
Yeah.
And our price came from 83p to 80p to 70p to 65p.
Yeah.
I'll always remember, we got down to from 83 to 78p to 75p to 70p, and we placed orders every 7 to 10 days with them.
Yeah.
And I just stopped. And because they got used to taking orders off us, they phoned me and said, well, how come you've stopped? I said, well, we're not making the margin, so I'll have to stop now. Right? Within a week, they got back and gave us the price we wanted and the margin we wanted.
Yeah. Mm. So I always say to people about pricing, yeah, you've got to find the pricing that products sell at, and then slowly find, or quickly find out, you know, get the price you want to get your margin.
Yeah.
But if I'd never started off by making 1p, you know, if I took that WD-40 and, you know, if I'd had the multi-price shop, we might have sold it for £2 and sold it a few.
Yeah.
You know, find that price point, sell it, and then source it to get your margin.
Mm.
And we sold more WD-40 than Halfords or anybody else, wow, in the country. We became one of their biggest customers.
All right.
And then from WD-40, we then go into people like Walker's Crisps and all the other brands.
Yeah.
And the brands then brought more people in, push up the, the brand of Poundland.
Yeah.
That people can now get brands from there.
Mm.
That brought even more customers.
Right.
The turnover went up. And we were achieving 5 or 10% like-for-like minimum like-for-like sales in every store.
Wow.
Yeah. So we went from 648 products when we opened the first store. We had almost 30,000 products.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
So how's business different now to the 90s?
My wife still don't let me have a day off.
She just likes to get you out there working, does she?
No, I'll always remember we sold the business and I was asked to go and, about 2 months after, they were starting Dragon's Den.
Yeah.
And they asked me to go on the start of the series, Dragon's Den, which was great. I wanted to do it. But at the time, it was plastered. We'd sold the business and people was exactly, oh, they sold, yeah, whether it was, that we sold for, when we sold Poundland completely, we sold for about 72, 74 million.
Yeah.
But it was plastered around, oh, they sold for 100 million, for 200 million, and the papers get carried away.
Yeah. Yeah.
And because it was in the papers and we had two young children, my wife wanted to get away a bit. That's why we bought this place.
Right. You mean and a she didn't want to be in the country?
And she didn't want to be in the media.
Yeah.
So we came here to be in the country and get the way a bit. So I rightly or wrongly, I turned down Dragon's Den.
Yeah.
We spent time doing this place together. We've doubled the size of what it was originally.
Yeah.
And with that in mind, it took probably 12 months to do all this. Getting towards the end of it. So imagine I've gone from 6,000 people working with them, making decisions to, I've got Tracy now. trying to tell her how to cook an egg. So she told me to get a job.
Yeah.
And then what I've then done is I'm involved with lots of different businesses now. So we in mobile payment businesses, because with Poundland, when I first started Poundland, it was all cash. Then it went to some percentages, 20 or 30% was credit card. And my belief, 10 years, no cash, no credit cards, it'll all be mobile payments.
Right.
So I've really been looking since I've sold Poundland for the next £1 billion business.
Right.
And I'm involved with a couple of things which I think could be.
You don't have to say what they are?
So mobile payments is one.
Yeah.
So we've got a mobile payment. We're now white labeling for lots of other brands, people. And on the mobile payments, so for example, you can be in a restaurant, you can order your food, you can walk and go. At the moment it's in Birmingham. It's going live in London shortly. There's about 500 venues in Birmingham. And then we've linked up with some of the major players and white labeled the software for them.
Right.
I was amazed with the airlines. You know, when I nearly died, I went to see the airlines. That, for example, Emirates, you go on their airlines, 700 people on their board. They're carrying 50 products on board you can buy.
Yeah.
You land in Dubai, it's the biggest duty free in the world.
Yeah.
Passengers have got 8 hours to shop.
Right.
Why don't we do mobile payments online?
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're, oh, great. Let's do a 5 million trial, passenger trial.
Yeah.
So mobile payments. The other thing is recruitment. I'm involved with recruitment. We do financial and banking, risk and compliance and cyber security. Because I'm in high volumes, I believe I've recently bought the name Temps. temps.co.uk.
Yeah.
And I really believe that people are going to do different jobs in the world. So, for example, in Poundland's store man, he's busy unloading the van, fill up the shelves. Yeah. Sandwich shops, dinner time, so busy. But the rest of the time is quiet. So I believe that people can't afford to keep people here all the time, and people want different experiences. So you could be, with the app that we're building, you could be working at Poundland in the morning, sandwich shop in the afternoon, and another job another job that night.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can have three jobs. You'll make more money because you're in the busy times.
Yeah.
You'll get more skills. So we bought the name temps.co.uk, and I think that could be another £1 billion business.
Mm-hmm.
I'm involved with MaxTime, which is time intended systems. So you put your finger in. It's something we developed in Poundland for time attendance. We've now got almost 2,000 place sites across the UK using it. So we've got... We've got 1,700 care homes.
Yeah.
We're in retailers, we're in factories, we're in height rings, anywhere where the staff, where the clock in and out.
Yeah. Right.
So we do all the payrolls.
Did you start all these companies or invest in these companies?
So what happened with that company is the guys used to work in the IT department for me. And when we sold Poundland, they didn't like the structure and the politics of the company. They went to set their own company up.
Right.
Met him one night. How you doing? I'm working at I've got an idea. MaxTime. Remember what we did in Poundland? We built that system doing this. Well, there's now a new biometric system come in. I can get them from China cheap. Why don't we do that?
Yeah.
So what you find, if you've got the right team in place, you got the right idea, you got the right contacts, you don't take much money to set things up. That company, I invested £20,000.
Right.
That does a couple of million turnover a month now.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Mm.
My son, as I felt bad about my dad selling Hooties, because I sold Poundland, I also maybe did the same to my kids.
Mm.
I sold the family business when my kids was growing up. They've now left school.
Right.
But although we had Poundland, Pound World, and the 99p shop we bought, customers used to say, I'm going to the pound shop, just to drive me mad. Got Poundland, I'm going to the pound shop.
Yeah.
So I tried to buy poundshop.com quite a few years, and because I was involved with Poundland, they want a stupid amount of money for it.
Mm.
And I was able to buy it three and a half years ago for $5,000.
Wow.
Poundshop.com.
Yeah.
And I bought it, and we set up a company mainly for my kids, my two boys, called poundshop.com. And in Poundland, the average spend was £4. It's now online today. I've been looking at this one because it's Black Friday.
Yeah.
And the average spend today is over £50 per customer.
Wow.
So from £4 in store,
yeah,
to £50. If I had Poundland today, I would be doing both, because I think you need to give customers both. With Poundland, although we had good systems and we knew everything at the warehouse level, at the shop level, it was the branch manager that would know that Mary comes in three times a week and what products she buys.
Yeah.
But with online, you get to know everything.
Yeah.
How often they buy, what do they buy, what time items they click in, what interests them.
Yeah.
So I would be doing both today. You need bricks and mortar, and you need the clicks.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people I've spoken to who are in retail, when they've seen others struggle, it's because they're only in retail and they're not in online.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it also seems like a lot of retailer adding services rather than just products to try and navigate this. Do you think it's a scary time for retail? I mean, obviously it's been hit pretty hard.
Oh, yeah, I think it's a scary thing for retail. I think the two big things for me is rates. The rates have always, if you take that shop, West Bromwich, I paid 26 grand all in. and rates was normally half of what you paid in rent. Now let's say you paid 20 grand rent, you pay 6 grand rent. Yeah. Nowadays the rents went up and up and up, and the rates went up and up and up. That shop, because I looked at a different concept, that shop, because I know it, I was offered 18 months ago. That shop now is over 100 grand in rates alone.
Wow.
There's no way you're going to make it pay.
No.
And most of the footfall have gone down because a lot of people now are shopping online.
Yeah.
But I would be doing both. I'd be having the footfall in the shops and getting, for example, a lot of people buy on poundshop.com, the heavier products. So they still go in Poundland,
yeah.
But they buy the every essential every product from us because it's delivered.
Mm. Yeah. So this podcast, Steve, has in the title, it has the word disruptive.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always like to ask people, what does disruptive or a disruptive entrepreneur, what does that mean to you?
If you take mobile payments, we totally change. Everybody's used to doing cash and credit cards, yeah? Mm. With mobile payments, we can totally change the way people pay for things.
Yeah.
So for me, I find that as disruptive. Mm. Yeah.
I mean, I guess Poundland was disruptive because no one else had the courage to sell everything for a pound. Everyone thought you were crazy for doing it. How can you make money on it? How can suppliers make money on it? That sounds quite disruptive to me.
Yeah, yes, yes. And everybody says it'll never work. And it was all about proving them wrong and proving the concept. And once we proved the concept, then we grew the business and then sold it.
Mm. And were you driven by just what you wanted to achieve, or were you to some degree driven by proving people wrong? Did you like proving people wrong? So, for example, on Monday, I'm having dinner with David McCourt. And he says, I can't help it. Whenever anyone says I can't do something, I have to go do it. I have to prove them wrong. I can see someone smiling at the back there. So do you like proving people wrong?
I don't think about proving people wrong, although I just know if it's doable, then we do it. And and it's with the people I've got around with me. So it wasn't about me or Trace doing Poundland. It was about the people that got around. I believe that the people around us could do it, and we could do, you know, 10, 50, 100, 200 million pound turnover.
Yeah.
But I do love to look at out the box and think, hey, can we do things differently?
Mm.
We're working on the distribution software at the moment. How can we do the software to make awareness work totally different to what people are used to?
Yeah.
And I'm spending most mornings now, 6 o'clock till 8:30, Skyping.
Right.
With our we've got an office in India, what do all the software for us now.
Mm.
Got 62 people working there.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you juggle all these different businesses? Because you've told me three, you invest in startups, you do stuff with NatWest. That's just what you've told me since I've been here. That sounds like five different things. How do you manage all that?
We're involved with 16 businesses at the moment. And it's really important that the people that you work with, the people that are running the business, that you support them, help them. You're there any time for them to pick up the phone and talk to you. Go to some of the major meetings they need to go. Also, the contacts we've got, offer the contacts over to them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've spent all my life finding the right contacts. So, for example, one of the business we're involved with, one call to my friend who I know, he placed an order for £1 million. And out of that, the company made 110,000.
Wow.
And that was a startup business.
Yeah.
From one phone call, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, you did say earlier, didn't you? Business is very much about the contacts you build.
It's all about the contacts you build. It's all about, like you say, being disruptive.
Mm.
How can you do things differently and quicker? And also, it's all about the pricing, getting your prices right.